those men changed my life. I met people that had been through more by the time they were five than I had been through in my life, and they were still standing. You know, they were still fighting, and their resiliency drew me in some way that I have a hard time explaining. But ultimately, I was so ignorant about this history that we're talking about communities like that, how they were established, how they still exist today, that I was compelled to move there to learn. And so 8 years ago, next month, moved there. And all of the work that you see today is a result of the learning that I have, the neighbors have taught me. The very first thing they said is, you know, we don't want to go back to prison, but to not go back to prison, we need jobs, we need to work. And I didn't understand that, but I know now today, if you were to look at the city of Dallas and draw a line across where 30 is, right, and say that's a divider for north and south, did you know that 55% of the population of our city lives north of that line and 45% lives south?
No.
You know what percentage of jobs are north of that line?
A whole lot more than 55%.
95%. So we have almost half the population of our city living where 5% of the jobs are. And if you understand poverty, you know that poverty also impacts mobility. So when jobs and food and everything else are in other parts of town and I can't get there, then I don't have access to it. So we started a job training program, and soon after we did that, people kept calling in sick, which obviously you can't do if you want a job. And I learned that they weren't calling in sick the way that I was accustomed to. It was not the cold or a flu. They were chronically sick. Yeah. Like, I can't ever work on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday because I have dialysis those days.
Right.
And, you know, my first question was out of self-preservation. Like, why is everybody here so sick? I moved here. Is this like a Flint, Michigan, where the water's bad? Am I going to get sick too? And when I kept asking those questions, people just kept saying, no, this is a food desert. And I have to be honest, I can't imagine that in 2019, in the richest country in the history of the world, in one of the richest cities in the richest country in the history of the world, we have neighborhoods like Bonton that don't have food.
Yeah, I mean, no Kroger's, no Safeways, nothing. No Tom Thumb's, no Piggly Wiggly's.
Nothing.
I mean, not even a 7-Eleven.
Not even a 7-Eleven. We don't
but
have...
But a whole lot of fast food.
No. In our neighborhood, we have two beer and wine stores and a liquor store.
Wow.
That's our economy.
So you've got a double whammy then. So you start a farm, and you employ people, mm-hmm. and they're going to make wages.
Yep.
And then they're going to turn around and sell the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, sell the stuff to each other so they're eating better.
Right.
But they're also going to make money for the project all along.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, they say this is not a proven thing, but the theory is accurate that in the inner city, our money stays there for less than 24 hours because none of the things that we spend our money on are in our neighborhood. So the very little bit of money that we earn immediately leaves being spent in other parts of town where all the goods and services are. So ultimately, if we're going to build wealth, we have to build economy there so that our dollars recirculate amongst one another.
But this is a cyclical business. I mean, what can you grow in December of 2019?
Believe it or not, Dallas climate is much better to grow vegetables in the winter than the summer.
No, I didn't.
So in the summer,
too hot this summer.
In the summer, we grow things that are all common things: squash and zucchini and tomatoes and cucumbers and okra and peppers. But in the winter, you grow lettuce and carrots and beets and radishes and
all outside
collard greens and mustard. Oh yeah, yeah. You grow four times the amount of food in the winter in our climate here in Dallas than you can in the food in the summer.
Okay, so some of the people around there and the people who work there, I guess, are the buyers of the produce. But who else is it?
Well, we kind of have a Robin Hood approach, right? We need to make as much money as we can so we can pay living wage jobs. So we sell a lot of our produce to the best restaurants in town, the ones that are farm-to-table restaurants. That,
names I would know?
Oh, yeah. Flora, Michelio, Lucia, the best restaurants in town that have chefs that want to use locally grown food that came right out of the ground that they can use it as fresh as possible.
And then you have a market that you've... Is this the most recent thing you've done, open the market?
One of them, yeah. We opened... It's been a year now, so we've done some work since then. But we opened what's called the Market at Bonton Farms a year ago in November, which is a neighborhood market and bodega and then a restaurant we serve breakfast and lunch out of.
So what's next? You said that's one of the most recent things we've done.
Well, we open a coffee shop, a coffee house next door to that. next month in January, and we are about to open the first 6-day a week farmers market next door to that. So we'll, and then we're working on potentially in by the end of 2020 opening an artisan bakery.
Yeah, this has got to be very gratifying.
Yes.
So, with all due respect, so the way I understand it, so you're a successful businessman, sort of a fairly high wage earner. You're living in Frisco, and you've got a couple of kids.
Yes.
And you forsake everything and move into an abandoned Habitat for Humanity house, sharing a house with somebody who just got out of prison, right?
Yes, sir.
Are you out of your mind?
A lot of people think so. I'll tell you, though, that I've learned along the way that while I don't have the same things I had before, I have new things now. And I'll tell you that I feel like I'm the richest man in Dallas. The things that I had before are all things that you can lose in a heartbeat. But the relationships that we have, the ability to see people who the world never gave a chance from the day they were born, start to live into their potential, that's a gift, and that's a value to me that no money could ever buy.
Do you have a sense of how many people you touch? I mean, either employing or providing food to, or through the ripple?
I mean, I can tell you that we've created 40 brand new jobs that didn't exist before. We have about 44 people that are paid interns, which means that they're not employable yet, but they're there to gain the skills to be employable. That number ebbs and flows all the time. There's hundreds of people that have done it, but the fact of the matter is that last year we had over 40 different countries visit our farm.
Get out of here.
And what we're trying to do is to say that really as a society, we have the wrong outlook on these problems. We treat these issues as if people are the problem.
This is a great time of year to be hearing about this. And now we know it's a great time of the year to go buy produce. We'll come see
Absolutely.
You. Absolutely. All right. Fellow Panhandle boy, Darren Babcock, is the executive director of Bonton Farms. Great story. You do good work. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. For more of our conversation with Mr. Babcock, go to krld.com/CEO. I'm David Johnson, News Radio 1080 KRLD.